KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, September 21st, 2006, for broadcast at this time. Today's topic will be LB 423, a petition initiative appearing on the November 7th Nebraska ballot. LB 423 would limit the growth of spending by the Nebraska State Legislature. Speaking in favor of LB 423 will be Dave Nabody, a member of SOS, or Stop Overspending Nebraska. In opposition to the measure, we'll hear from Mick Mines, a member of the Nebraska State Legislature from Blair, Nebraska. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Dale Munson, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon and welcome to our Omaha Press Club Noon Forum. My name is Dale Munson and I'm a member of the Omaha Press Club Education Committee, which produces these monthly forums. Well, I guess we've all experienced the stretching of our individual dollars as the cost of goods and services continues to increase. The same situation applies to government. Are we as a state spending too much? As the result of a successful petition drive by SOS, Stop Overspending Nebraska, voters in November will find on their ballot a proposal to limit spending by our state government. Is a state spending lid the way to go? One of our speakers thinks so, David Nabody, an Omaha small businessman and exponent of small businesses and farmers, has been actively involved in Nebraska politics for decades. And in fact, Mr. Nabody was one of three Republican candidates for governor in last spring's primary. Taking a different view of the proposed spending lid amendment is our other speaker, Mick Mines, a business executive from Blair. Mr. Mines is a former city councilman and mayor of Blair and is currently a state senator in the Nebraska unicameral. Please welcome both of our guests. We encourage members in attendance today to submit written questions to our speakers. One of our committee members will pick them up and bring them forward to me. You'll find paper and pencils on each table. So first to the podium is the head of the Committee for State Stewardship promoting the Stop Overspending Initiative, Dave Nabody.
Thank you, Dale. It's great to be here. I'm glad to be a part of this forum, and I'll have to tell you right now that my burden is the small guy, the small businessman, the taxpayer, the person that lives in Nebraska that is paying the tax burden of this state. And I've watched my whole adult lifetime Nebraska not address the critical issues of modernizing and streamlining government. And in my opinion, the time is now to begin. If we don't do some things to modernize and streamline state government in Nebraska, we're going to be having this conversation in 10 years, and we're going to have this conversation again in 20 years. And we have a tremendous opportunity to make positive change in Nebraska by putting in some disciplines that I think will change the future of the state for the better. And that's why I'm supportive of Initiative 423. Let me start by talking a little bit about what I feel are the problems that Nebraska has today. We're the sixth highest tax state in America. We have a 22-year spending growth rate that is double the rate of inflation, a 228% increase. If you take real estate, income, and motor vehicle taxes and you add them together at any socioeconomic level, the citizens of Nebraska pay double the taxes that they would pay if they lived in states like South Dakota, Wyoming, high-growth southern states like Florida. Colorado's taxes are about 60% of what you pay here. That's out-of-pocket cost. We're 49th in economic growth. A large portion of our affluent are leaving upon retirement, and they're moving to not only southern states that are warmer, but they're moving to states that have their tax burdens so much lower than ours that, like I said, the tax load gets cut in half. That became very apparent to me between the 90s and the early 2000s when clients would come to my financial advisory firm and say, look, Nabody, we just retired. We're excited. We're moving to Missouri, Florida, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, you name it, and I'm cutting my tax bill so much that I can pay for my transportation coming back and forth and put a lot of money in my pocket. Many Nebraska entrepreneurs are also expanding in other states where they have less red tape and lower taxes. Imagine being in the panhandle of Nebraska, and to your north is South Dakota, to your west is Wyoming, and to your south is Colorado. All of those states have tax burdens that are significantly lower than Nebraska's. And what we saw happening was entrepreneurs in places like Kimball and Scottsbluff and Chadron were jumping borders and opening up operations in the other states and running their headquarters out of there and still sending their service trucks and their employees into Nebraska to continue to do work. The remaining baby boomers are going to be retiring in the next 10 years, and many plan on leaving. I don't know how many times you hear it, but I hear it all the time. When I retire, I'm out of here. And we've got the next 10 years to try to modernize and streamline things so that last batch of the baby boomers might have more reason to stay here. Too many of our college graduates are leaving for better opportunities in other states. I just saw a stat the other day from the Census Bureau that said that the state and local taxes per capita on Nebraskans are $1,500 to $2,000 a year more in Nebraska than they are in some of the other lower tax states, and even states like Missouri that are border states. High taxes equal less economic opportunity. Projected spending by the Legislative Fiscal Office over the next 4 years is about 27%. And the question I have for everybody is, will your household income go up by 28%? According to USA Today, household purchasing power in Nebraska fell almost 5% in the year 2005. So why is Nebraska behind? Why are we so high taxed? Why can you move to other states and cut your tax bill in half? Well, over the last 40 years, Nebraska has never attempted to modernize or streamline government. Lobbyists and special interest groups have become skilled at delivering propaganda that scares the voters away from strategies that limit government growth. The legislature has historically cared more about accommodating the special interest groups and their agendas at the expense of the private sector and taxpayers. The state has not had to live within a reasonable budget, just like all the rest of us have to do. I think the bottom line to me is the legislature has failed at being a watchdog for the taxpayers on a fiscal basis, and they've become a lapdog for a lot of the special interests that are in Nebraska driving the budget. So what does big government and special interest groups want from you, the citizens of Nebraska? They want a blank check. Nebraskans for the Good Life wants Nebraska to be able to tax whatever they have to tax and spend whatever they have to spend to keep up with whatever the budget is, whatever the agenda is, and they're making no attempts to modernize, streamline, shrink, get government down to a level where our tax load isn't high in Nebraska. So what should we do? In my opinion, the citizens need to wrestle control away from the lobbyists and the special interest groups and protect the taxpayers. 423 will do just that by putting a limit on the growth of state spending to the inflation rate plus population growth. 423 will put the taxpayers in charge of our future. If the legislature cannot meet its obligations under 423, they must bring it to the taxpayers to a vote to extend the limit. So how long do we wait before we start limiting spending growth? Until we become the third highest tax state in America? We've moved from being the 13th or 14th highest tax state 10 years ago to the 6th today, according to the Tax Foundation. Do we wait until the cost of maintaining government becomes 50% of what we produce? Until Nebraska's state income tax is 10% and property taxes and motor vehicle taxes double in the next 10 years? Do we wait to finally start limiting spending growth until after the last batch of baby boomers are living in Florida, Missouri, Texas, South Dakota, or Colorado? The big question is, how long do we wait? It's time to put the taxpayers in charge of the state. And saying yes to 423 is the best way to do it. Now, is there a risk that 423 will raise local taxes? We hear that all the time. The opposition has got commercials running saying, hey, your property taxes are going to go up. Your property taxes are going to go up. Same thing that they said in 1998. Since 1998, property taxes have gone up 55%. I didn't hear any of those groups stepping out and defending the taxpayers saying, my God, your property taxes are going up. Let us go inside the belly of the beast and figure out what we can do to modernize and streamline. Local taxes will not go up. There is no scenario where the legislature will need to push expenses to the local governments. Not if they do all they can to contain spending at the state level. Not if they do all they can to modernize and streamline state government. Not if they have valid reasons to extend the limit and the voters agree, will you see local property taxes or any local taxes go up. As a matter of fact, the property taxes went down in Colorado after the passage of their spending limit. Why is there so much opposition to passing 423? Our opponents have a vested interest in keeping the budget growing without limits. If we lower the cost to state government, jobs may be lost, unnecessary programs and services may be eliminated, and lobbyists and union bosses won't have the power and the influence that they have today. Those who get perks from state government have great fear that their special programs may be pruned or eliminated. So what are they doing? They're mounting a false propaganda campaign to scare the voters. So who's producing the false propaganda? Those who have a vested interest in getting as much as out of government as they possibly can for their members. It's the national and the state education associations, the national and state employees unions, the leagues of municipalities and their national and local connections, some officials representing police and fire, not all, but some, AARP both on a local and a national basis. They've called themselves Nebraskans for the good life, but to me it looks more like bureaucrats for the good life on the taxpayers' dime. Are these special interest groups working for the best interest of your family, your community, your wallet, your children's future, or theirs? When have these groups ever supported spending cuts or tax cuts? When have these groups ever stood to defend the taxpayers from tax increases? The answer is never. So let's talk about the truth about 423. 423 will not cut one penny of state spending. It allows spending to grow at a reasonable rate, which is the Midwestern inflation rate plus population growth each year. The budget will go up every year. It just will not go up at a rate faster than the rate of inflation. 423 is flexible. If politicians want to spend more than the limit, they can, as long as they come to the voters and make their case first. 423 will end the roller coaster budgeting that Nebraska has experienced in the past. So let's talk about Colorado for a little bit. You're going to see a video or hear a presentation about how horrible Colorado was. Since 1992, the taxpayers in Colorado have received $3.2 billion in tax relief. That's with a B. The average family of four received $3,200 back. In the 1990s, when the stock market was going crazy and people were selling stocks and paying capital gains, state budgets were flush with cash. What did Nebraska do with our cash? We spent it. What did California do with their cash? They spent it. What did Colorado do? They gave it back to the taxpayers because they had to, because they had a spending limit. When the economy then went into the downturn at the year 2000 and then September 11th hit, Colorado's budget was low enough that they were able to weather the economic down cycle in their state much better than most other states. What do? We raise taxes. Colorado didn't have to do that. Their budget has gone up every year by the inflation rate plus population growth. It has not been the starvation rates that the opposition is communicating. Recently, voters agreed to suspend the tax rebates for 5 years to give themselves a chance to rebuild infrastructure because of the down economic cycle. It wasn't the taxpayers' Bill of Rights that created the problem. It was the economy that created the problem that impacted all the other states. And so the voter said, you know what? We've got back $3.2 billion in tax refunds. I tell you what, if you made a good case for rebuilding infrastructure, we're with you. Now, it only passed by about 51, 52%. But the bottom line is the voters had the choice to decide how money was spent. And they didn't cancel the taxpayers' Bill of Rights. They didn't eliminate it. It is not a disaster. It's still on the books. All the taxpayers did is said, look, keep our money for 5 years. Don't send us any more rebates. And then at the end of 5 years, we want it to take right back up to where it was. Don't Nebraskans deserve the same right? Let's talk about the economic facts in Tabor, post-Tabor in Colorado. Since 92, Colorado's economy has consistently ranked number one in the nation by the American Enterprise Institute. Their job growth doubled over the previous decade after they put in their spending limit. Private sector jobs grew at a faster rate than government jobs as well. Colorado experienced the fastest growth rate in gross state product per capita in the country. Only Delaware grew faster. Colorado moved from 43rd to 7th in median family income growth. They moved from 43rd to 7th in economic growth per capita. The National Education Association ranks Colorado 27th in the nation in school spending, right in the middle of the states. In terms of K-12 spending, Colorado ranks 7th in per capita state and local spending for K-12 education. Now, the presentation you're going to see says Colorado dropped to 49th in the nation. The NEA says 27th. What's the difference here? The difference is the opposition found a formula where they compared incomes to the amount of money that's being spent on education. After the passage of Tabor, Colorado's income soared. We should have been so lucky. So their income number is very high. If you put it in relationship to what they spend on education, it's a fantastic economic indicator that they've been able to keep government spending under control in relationship to incomes. What it really means is they're second in the nation at having education expenses in line compared to income. It does the exact opposite of what they're portraying, and what they're putting out is absolutely opposite of what the NEA is saying. Colorado ranks 6th in spending for higher education in the country from 2003 to 2004. But don't listen to me. Let's listen to what the governor of Colorado has to say about their taxpayers' Bill of Rights. First of all, in an editorial he wrote, February 16, 2006, any budget cuts that occurred in Colorado were due entirely to the recession they incurred, not the spending limit. The spending limit helped their state weather the recession better than many other states. K-12 funding increased each year during the recession, and the universities are not drying up. He says there is no need to resort to scare tactics. Voters, I believe, are perfectly capable of sorting out the facts. One has to wonder why there is such great consternation over letting the voters decide this issue. The question is, if families and businesses have to live within a budget, why shouldn't a state? It's a question the voters should be allowed to decide for themselves. That's Governor Bill Owens from Colorado. Let's do a little tax comparison here. If you look at a person living in Colorado versus a person living in Nebraska, and they have a $300,000 home, an annual retirement income of $75,000 for a couple filing jointly, and they have two vehicles, an 05 Ford Expedition and an 01 Buick Park Avenue. The total annual taxes in Colorado are $7,057. In Nebraska, they're $11,972. The annual difference is $4,915. And you know their local in-state tuition is lower than ours as well. So what's the impact? If you vote yes on 423, what's the impact? It puts taxpayers in charge of the way government leaders spend their money. It limits state spending growth to the Midwestern inflation rate plus population growth. If politicians want to spend more, they have to ask the people first. Excess revenues are returned to the taxpayers, not spent by politicians. It creates a budget stabilization fund that's available for recessions. Exceptions are included for catastrophic events. 423 puts politicians on a budget, requiring them to operate under real-world rules, rules that families, businesses, and individuals have had to live by every day. At home, you can't just vote yourself a raise or spend beyond your means, and with 423, neither can state government. So I invite you to join the SOS Coalition and vote yes on 423. And our website is sosnebraska.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Now presenting the opposition to SOS Nebraska, State Senator Mick Mines.
Thank you. Thanks, Dale. And let me thank you all for being here today. I know it's not a pretty day out there, and this is a great debate. I'm honored to have the opportunity to be here, and let me get started. I hope I can bring to you a practical perspective to what would happen if Initiative 423 were to be adopted on November 7th. I hope that I bring experience for the discussion as a legislator, a business person, a longtime involved citizen, and a former mayor. Let me start by saying that Nebraska's system of taxing is no different than any other state in the country but for Colorado. It's not perfect. There's always room for improvement. And it's a flexible system so that we in government and we in the legislature and the governor can cut taxes when we can and raise taxes when we must. Mr. Nabody said the voters don't believe politicians. Excuse me, he would have you believe that politicians are deaf to the concerns that burdensome taxes. What Dave forgets is that we as politicians pay taxes too, and he's selling this constitutional straitjacket called Initiative 423 with trendy statements like the state spending is out of control, lawmakers have no concern for taxpayers, take the final say away from big spending bureaucrats and put it back in the hands of the people. Assertions like these, they make for a sensational sound bites, but in fact they're complete nonsense. I would ask, now Dave did bring up the Colorado model, and I would ask that you will turn your attention to the TV screen. It's, as he mentioned, it's called the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights, or TABOR. And TABOR was voted in, as he said, in 1992, and it's the base model for 423 that we're talking about today. Let me note that TABOR-like or Initiative 423-like initiatives have been proposed 39 other times in other states, and only Colorado has taken this approach. There's a reason for that, ladies and gentlemen. Let's take a look at what Coloradans have to say.
It promised to cut government waste, make politicians accountable, and provide taxpayer refunds. If only the taxpayers of Colorado had been told about the fine print.
Coloradans, I think, were not fully aware of what they were voting on when they voted for TABOR.
You know, usually when it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true, and that's what's happened in Colorado.
It sounds awesome. I get to vote on any new taxes. Why wouldn't I support it? And what I found is that there's a whole lot more to TABOR than that particular soundbite.
You may be wondering why you should care about what's happened to Colorado's schools, universities, healthcare, roads, and economy. After all, you don't live there. But Colorado is a case study of the harmful effects of TABOR, the so-called Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And with some politicians trying to bring it to your state, you should know what it's actually done to Colorado taxpayers in their state.
Coloradans were told in 1992 when TABOR passed that what this guaranteed them was a right to vote on any and all tax increases. What the public didn't realize is that it would contain the strictest tax and spending limitation of any state in the country and long-term would hobble us economically.
The problem with TABOR is that the formula was flawed. It was deeply flawed.
TABOR's fine print reveals a rigid formula of inflation plus population growth that determines how much the state government can increase its spending from one year to the next. And here's why this formula doesn't work. Inflation is determined using the Consumer Price Index, which is based on what a typical American buys. Think of it as a basket of goods that includes things like housing, cars, and food. But here's the problem. What consumers buy day-to-day is not the same as the basket of goods state government buys day-to-day. States must purchase things like education and health care, services that rise in price much faster than what the average person buys. So restricting a state's budget based on the increase of the consumer price index prevents states from keeping up with the rising cost of vital services, making drastic cuts inevitable. Making matters worse is the second part of the Tabor formula, population growth. It's defined as the overall population change in a state from year to year. The problem here is that population growth doesn't factor in the subgroups of people with costly needs, like school children, the elderly, and the sick, groups that tend to grow more rapidly. For example, as the baby boom generation ages, the number of senior citizens in most states is rising faster than the general population, putting new burdens on state programs that help the elderly. So limiting state spending using overall population growth ignores the needs of groups like the elderly. The faulty formula is only one major problem with Tabor. Another major problem is that because it gets locked into a state's constitution, it is very rigid, leaving no flexibility for a state to respond to unexpected challenges.
Once you've established a constitutional amendment, it's just almost impossible to change it.
Tabor promises refunds to people, promises people that they'll get money in their pocket. And the reality in Colorado is that while you get a little bit of a check in some years, you end up paying so much more for schools, for roads, for tuition, and for health care. But it's an empty promise. There's no real new money for anybody. In fact, it's costing us more.
Parents are paying for essential services that previously came out of school budgets. We pay for workbooks. We pay for paraprofessionals, we pay for reading paraprofessionals, art classes, music classes.
The most important thing that governments can do to aid an economy are to invest in people, education, workforce, and infrastructure.
Tom Clark is the executive director of the Denver Metro Chamber, the largest business organization in the state.
The biggest and most obvious infrastructure that suffered have been roads and higher education. We're running, depending upon who you talk to, a $40 to $60 billion deficit in road work that needs to be found somewhere, and Tabor's made it impossible for us to get that money back into projects.
I think it definitely has an impact on safety in the community.
$300,000 was actually paid by the community.
Art Morales is the fire chief for Castle Rock, Colorado, population 35,000. He's had to freeze jobs at his fire station due to Tabor budget restrictions, putting his existing firefighter safety at risk, as well as the safety of the growing community. Tabor is marketed as a way to cut government waste, but in reality it has ended up costing taxpayers more through increased fees for everything from fishing licenses and court filing fees to contractor fees that get passed on to new homeowners. Rancher John Singletary says the Water Regulatory Agency in Colorado has gotten so broke that they've turned into a primarily fee-funded agency.
When they come and inspect our wells or do any services that regulate our water process here, they charge enormous fees, maybe up 300-400% over what they were prior to this Tabor.
And Singletary says Tabor's created a funding drought for Colorado's Ag Department.
The Colorado Department of Agriculture has no money to help the farmer in research and infested areas. We have different diseases that sometimes hit our livestock that we need help, assistance on, and boy, it's really difficult. It's difficult to find that money.
Has she ever had pneumonia before?
She's had 1 year infection.
We had no idea what the true impact of Tabor would be when it was passed.
We have had to cut programs in our substance abuse area. We've had to cut programs in our home health care. We have had to cut our prenatal program, and we have cut our primary care treatment programs. Tabor has definitely had an impact here.
And on November 1st, 2005, after 12 years of Tabor, Colorado voters said enough. They approved a measure to put Tabor on hold for the next 5 years to avoid further deterioration of state services. So learn from the experiences of Coloradans. If someone is trying to convince you to vote to put Tabor into your state's constitution, think about it. Think about what this rigid, unrealistic formula of inflation plus population growth could do to your state. And ask yourself, is it worth it?
You have to be careful if someone's putting money in your pocket while your bridges are falling down.
The things that you care about in your state will disappear. They will start crumbling. Your schools, your roads.
My recommendation to other states is learn from the Colorado experience. Don't go down the road we traveled.
Well, thank you for your attention. As you saw, Tabor is a proven failure in Colorado. So why have similar initiatives been rejected 39 times in other states? And why is this a bad idea for Nebraska? I'll give you five reasons. First of all, Initiative 423 is poorly crafted, and it's chock full of technical problems. If approved, Nebraskans can look forward to years of paying for countless expensive court challenges. Indeed, the legislative's fiscal office has identified 14 technical issues that affect their budgeting process already. Can you imagine how this provision in the Nebraska initiative would land in the laps of lawyers with high-paying clients? It happens to be in Section 6. It says any taxpaying resident of Nebraska can sue the state to enforce the provisions of Initiative 423. Oh, and by the way, it also says that the court must favor their position in their interpretation. So not only are they allowing anyone in the state to sue the state, they're also telling the courts how they should decide those particular issues. Did I mention that Colorado's had 40 lawsuits? They had those in the first 4 years after Tabor was adopted. Issue number two, so who's behind 423? Certainly Dave Nabody and his Committee for State Stewardship, and a Mr. Groan from North Platte and his committee. I think it's called the Western Nebraska Taxpayers Association. They're the front men. They're darn good at their job. But there's been $800,000 infused into the promotion of 423. And not only will you not find broad-based support by Nebraskans, you will not find contributions from these organizations or a general range of Nebraskans. The $800,000 in contributions received so far have come from Americans for Limited Growth, Glenville, Illinois, Americans at its best, Boise, Idaho, and Colorado at its best, located in Golden, Colorado. Now, every political campaign or initiative relies on support from out-of-state contributors. That's the nature of our business. That's what we do. But when absolutely all the money is coming from out-of-state, doesn't it beg the question why? Why are people that don't even live here spending what will probably be millions of dollars when this is all through to influence Nebraska's tax policy? I can't answer that. But I'm not naive enough to believe that these are benevolent groups that simply want what's best for the citizens of Nebraska. Number three, on the other side, you need to ask yourself who is in opposition to 423. That list is about 50 organizations, Nebraska organizations, and is continuing to grow. I won't name them all for you, but I will start with a strong opponent, our governor, Dave Heineman. You saw the AARP is involved, AARP Nebraska. The Nebraska Farm Bureau is in opposition. Chambers of Commerce are in opposition. The Nebraska PTA, Hospital Association from Nebraska, League of Women Voters are in opposition. The Fraternal Order of Police, League of Nebraska Municipalities, the Sierra Club, the Nebraska AFL-CIO, and the State Nebraska State Education Association. Now, it's rare indeed when you get these organizations with their diverse interests to stand up on any issue, and they've come together in opposition to 423. They understand that there are dangerous consequences hidden in this initiative. Number four, 423 completely ignores the tax that most adversely affects Nebraskans, property tax. Let me connect a few dots for you. We as a state send 30% of the state's general fund budget Our budget's about $3.2 billion a year. We send $944 million a year to K-12 districts in everyone's community to greatly reduce their reliance on property tax. Now, Omaha Public Schools, as an example, receives $157 million in state aid. $157 million of sales and income tax is diverted to Omaha Public Schools. It represents 39% of their budget. So if the owner of a $100,000 home in Omaha already pays 58% of his property tax to Omaha Public Schools, what do you suppose the stranglehold on the state budget will do when we have to cut state spending and state aid to education? As you saw in the video, spending requirements of state government do not resemble the spending of your home or business, and 423 falls on its face in maintaining public safety, Medicaid, our prisons, public assistance, and higher education. Take an example of a tragic medical emergency in your family. It can happen to anyone of us at any time. And I suspect that many of us in this room are a mere 6 months away from relying on Medicaid, given a medical emergency in your family. And I suggest that you can't tie the health and well-being of uninsured kids and seniors in nursing homes to a boardroom formula based on the Consumer Price Index and population growth. Nebraskans won't accept that. Initiative 423 is a gimmick. It's pushed out by out-of-state interests. It'll hurt Nebraska families. It will damage our state's economy and destroy our quality of life. I urge you and everyone you know to vote against Initiative 423. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have several questions here, and there are several directed to Dave Nabody in regard to the funding for the efforts of SOS Nebraska. And this one is specific. It says, what groups or persons from outside Nebraska are funding the efforts of SOS?
There's a capitalistic organization called Americans for Limited Government that's funded by the private sector, Americans at its best. There's a number of guys in Colorado that see the importance of the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights and feel like it would be a good thing for Nebraska. They've helped make contributions. We've got local contributions from people from all over the state today. You know, these things, if we'd had a year to warm up for this, it might have been a little bit different, but we didn't. And, you know, contrary to what the opposition is saying, you know, we're seeing huge, huge numbers of people saying they're going to vote for this thing. We just came back from Husker Harvest Days, and we had a survey there that people could come through and vote for. 80% of the people that went through there is in favor of supporting this thing. So it is local people that got started by Mike Groney in North Platte. The reason I'm on board with it is because I'm tired of hearing this kind of stuff that we've heard today. I mean, we've got lots of excuses of why we can't modernize and streamline. They bring out every possible strategy that, you know, somebody listening to this think, you might think, geez, we're all going to die if this passes. You know, the people in Colorado are doing just fine with their spending limit. 1,500,000 people moved into Colorado after the passage of the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. If it was so terrible and everything was falling apart, why in the world would that number of people move into that state? That's almost the entire state of Nebraska. And if you move there today, your property taxes would be a third what they are here. The income tax is a flat 4.5%. Motor vehicle tax is about the same. The bottom line is spending is out of control. If you've got a 27% increase forecasted by the Legislative Fiscal Office, and if we keep compounding at a 7% spending rate, how in the world are we going to pay for it? It's a huge, huge problem. And I'll accept the money from people from the private sector, wherever it is across the country. Bring it on. Bring it in. The opposition is getting money from national union organizations that can extract membership dues from their members and put it into political campaigns. And in some cases, government people today in the state of Nebraska are using government resources to campaign against this, which is absolutely wrong. So I'm happy that there's people around the country that feel like this is important. And, you know, the bottom line is these guys look at this whole initiative as a statement on America. Government has gotten too big all across America. Spending has gotten way out of control all across America. And you're not going to start changing America till you start changing it one state at a time. So I'm proud to be involved in this initiative. I'd like to hear how they plan on getting spending cut so that we can survive the next 10 or 20 years. And the other thing you need to know, too, about 423, it doesn't cut one thing. Not one thing gets cut. You get last year's budget plus the inflation rate plus the growth rate in population. Nothing gets cut. So these doomsday scenarios that all of a sudden everything's going to fall apart is just pure nonsense. And if the legislature does what they should do to modernize and streamline state government, which they have not done in 40 years, we'll be just fine.
Mr. Bynes, do you have any comments?
I do, Dale. A lot of sound bites. And you know, Dave tends to sometimes play fast and loose with statistics. Let me give you one statistic. Nebraska spending averaged 4.1% increase over the last 5 years. Folks, we had a recession, and the state of Nebraska addressed that. In fact, 1 year we raised your taxes 0.6% of 1%, and over the last 5 years we've increased the tax, increased spending by 4.1%. The forecast from our fiscal office is merely that. It's a forecast. In government, just like your household, events change, and they change quickly. In state government, we have to be able to react. Now, the argument for 423 says, well, you can just take it to the voters, and they'll approve if it makes sense. Here's what happened in Colorado. By the way, they did put the initiative on hold for 5 years. What hasn't been said is of the 176 school districts in Colorado, 171 have opted out. They had that provision where they can opt out. So, I mean, there are ways of getting around their system. So what David has also said, and again, the statistics are darn statistics. David listed all these things where Nebraska ranks, you know, 50th and 48th. Well, I have some statistics as well. They will balance. I won't bore you with them because they're merely statistics. The problem with this initiative is if he's wrong, there are no do-overs. We don't get a do-over when your child in the sixth grade is needs medical attention and you can't afford it, and the state can't afford to fund Medicaid like it should be. We don't get do-overs when your elderly parents have to go in a nursing home, don't have money. You know who picks that up? Medicaid picks that up. And let me throw just a couple statistics to help balance this thing. To get your arms around state government financing isn't real hard. This isn't a magic kingdom. I can identify 92% of the budget in three items. 47% of the money that the state collects from sales and income tax, 47% goes to education, higher education, state colleges, K-12 funding, special education, 47%. You know what? Nebraskans have identified that the educating of our children is an important issue, so we spend 47% of your money doing that. Health care, including Medicaid, public assistance, mental health, is 37%. We take care of people that don't have the ability to take care of themselves. And finally, the judiciary, corrections, state patrol is 8%. So 47% is education, 37% is health, and 8% is judiciary and corrections. That's 92%. I'll throw 4 more percent at you. State aid to local governments, cities, counties, ESUs is 2%. And the homestead exemption that our seniors enjoy right now, that favors seniors, that's another 2%. I'm up to 96% of the budget, folks. Now, if Mr. Nabity and 423 can come up with ideas that are better than 49 legislators who, by the way, pay taxes too, I've not heard it. I've heard sound bites. I've heard our taxes are too high. We change our tax structure every year in the body. We don't make wholesale cuts. We can't afford to do that because we spend money on health care, education, and things that the normal household budget doesn't touch. Again, you saw that on the video. So thank you, Dale.
We have a few more questions, but have at it, Dale.
I would say just based on what he just said, it proves my point, and it's why you absolutely need a spending limit because everything that he listed off is a special interest group. And rather than the legislature being a watchdog for the taxpayers, they're becoming lab dogs for all the special interest groups. And what he just said proves it. I mean, how in the world are we going to get our taxes to where we're competitive? I mean, look at South Dakota. Less than half the people. And they have a state that's about the same size as we do. Costs you about $40 to $80 to license a brand new car. Their property tax is about 80% of ours. They have no income tax. Does that happen by accident? No. It happens with leadership. Leadership we haven't seen in the legislature for years, 40 years, my entire adult lifetime. There's been no attempts to modernize or streamline state government. We start programs in 1960, and we just keep feeding them and feeding them and feeding them. There's no sunset provisions. There's no top-to-bottom performance audits or performance reviews. There's no privatizing of government entities, which is going on in other parts of the country. So what's our legislature do? Well, they put a labor tax out there on our small business people that drives them absolutely insane that they finally got rid of. Instead of shrinking the budget, they raise taxes. And look what our legislature's doing now to solve problems. You got chaos in the Omaha public school system, and so what do they want to do? They want to create a whole new layer of bureaucracy that could cost another $35 million a year on the property taxpayers. And that's the solution. We'll just throw money at things to shut people up. And the private citizens of this state are fed up. And I'm proud to stand here for them, the
Mr.
people
Bynes?
That pay the taxes.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Dale. I'm tired of hearing about South Dakota. South Dakota's got no income tax. They've got lower property tax. Ladies and gentlemen, they tax food. I did a study when I first got in the body, and if Nebraska were to tax food like South Dakota, we would have no income tax. Our sales tax would be 2%. This isn't magic. South Dakota has to run their government. They choose public policy to do that by taxing food. Nebraska doesn't tax food, and I think that's the right thing to do. I also hear that the labor tax was a tough move. I voted for the labor tax. I also voted to increase taxes the first year I was there. That year, we increased our spending 0.6% of 1%, 0.6 of 1%. And we had to do something. We had to raise money. The revenues have since increased, and the legislature had the ability and chose to eliminate that tax. I can tell you, too, that this coming session, you'll see other minor adjustments to our taxing system. You'll see a run at eliminating the estate tax. You'll see a run at eliminating the inheritance tax. You'll see a run at reducing income tax. I have no doubt about that. But state government can't make big runs like Mr. Nabity is proposing. You can in business, and you can when you're freewheeling. But ladies and gentlemen, state government is not something you slap around and make judgments based on some formula. It takes time. It takes a lot of effort by a lot of people. So, again, I just think a lot of the things that I'm hearing on the other side sound real good in the paper, but in practice they don't work.
This next question is addressed to Mr. Nabity, but I'd like you both to address it. It's not just government organizations that are opposing this, but also many chambers of commerce and business groups. Why?
Well, I think that's pretty easy. The Chamber of Commerce groups across the state last year worked pretty hard to increase the tax incentive packages for big corporations across the state. And they're afraid that if you put a limit on spending, I mean, everybody that gets something out of state government is afraid that if you slow the growth, that somebody's going to lose out. That's the deal. So everybody wants the budget to just keep growing like it is. It'll just grow whatever it has to grow at. And everybody's afraid that, geez, you know, if we start putting in some fiscal responsibility here, we might lose out on something. So I believe that the chambers have bought into that philosophy. The problem is that they're selling out the future of our kids and the state in a big, big way. And, you know, it comes back to the fact that there isn't any waste in state government. That's what I'm hearing Mick say. We can't do anything. There's no way to save any money. Yet Medicaid has an audit, and they lost $13 million in fraud, waste, and abuse. There's no money to save in the state, I guess. You know, the legislature comes up with a concoction to create efficiencies in Class 1 schools, LB 126. And you know what's happening across the state today? The school districts, the acquiring school districts, are spending more money than the combined district would have spent if they'd been left alone. And they've come up for ways to blow more money and raise property taxes even farther. The legislature can screw up a lot of things in this state, and in my opinion, they have. They have not been looking out for the taxpayers. And the special interest groups, they just pound away. And, you know, it's the nature of the beast, and it's been happening for 40 years. It's exactly why we need the spending
money. Mr. Bynes, your response to why chambers of commerce and other business organizations are opposing the lid.
Thank you, Dale. It's real easy to paint opponents of something with the same brush, and that's what's going on here. If you oppose 423, you're a special interest group. Folks, we all belong to special interest groups. We all have special interests. Medicaid is a special interest. And by the way, someday most of us in here will touch Medicaid. To say that the Nebraska Farm Bureau, with its tens of thousands of members across the state, is a special interest group and all they want is money for their farmers is wrong. To identify that our seniors, the AARP Nebraska, a special interest group, to identify them as crackpots is wrong. To identify chambers of commerce that are vested interest in growing the economy in their state as well as their local communities is wrong. When we talk about Class 1 schools, Class 1 schools is a whole thing we could spend another day on. However, if one truly believes that the way to government efficiency and lowering the cost of government is merger and consolidation of local government entities like I do, the merger or assimilation, and the word is assimilation, of Class 1 into K-12 districts makes great sense. So does the merger and or consolidation of counties and the merger and consolidation of cities and counties like Omaha and Douglas. 423 sends a great message. Let's control spending. And to throw out suggestions that the legislature isn't doing their job, that we're somehow haphazard in what we do, is wrong. There are 49 folks down there trying to do the very best we can, and I think we do a pretty good job. Just to paint us all as goofballs, I think is not only unfair, but certainly don't know what's going on in the process. You have to be involved in the process. And by the way, state government, I never say that state government can't become more efficient, can't do things better. I'm one of those folks that say that on a routine basis. But you don't slap a 423 solution on a perception that things are going to hell in a handbasket. We've had, over the last 5 years, we've averaged 4.1% growth in spending. That's not out of control, folks. Thank you, Dale.
Okay, this one also for you, Mr. Mines. Can you name any state that has been hurt by spending lid other than Colorado? And in regard to Colorado, if Tabor is so bad in Colorado, why after 14 years is it still there?
Dale, I'm not familiar with any other state in the country that is under a severe restriction on state spending. What the formula that Tabor uses is less restrictive than the one proposed in Nebraska, but it takes some time. It takes time for the stranglehold to take hold. And it, as an example, the state of Nebraska, we have to balance our budget, by the way, every biennium. The state of Nebraska budget, we can offload and will offload many of the costs of doing business in the state. We can offload the cost of education to local schools. We can reduce the amount we spend at the university and increase tuition. we can completely eliminate state aid to cities, counties, and educational services units. It's simple to for a while to comply with 423. Give it 10 years, and I'll tell you what, you'll see the Colorado, you drive on their roads. Colorado's roads are obnoxious. Nebraska spends about $350 million a year on our roads. Half of that comes from the federal government. We can take half of that away immediately. It's merely a shift in the cost of government, and I don't think Nebraskans want the cost of government to be loaded on property tax and less services.
We're down to about a...
Hey, don't I get to respond to that?
Okay, quick response. 2 minutes.
A couple things. One, the economics just don't bear this whole deal out. If you talk to retirees that have the flexibility to choose where they want to live, over and over and over they say, we're out of here, we're not paying the taxes anymore. And we're economic fools if we think we can continue to do things the same way we are with the status quo approach of just letting government grow to whatever it wants to grow. He just said that it's simple to comply with this for a while. Do you know what will happen to the economy of Nebraska if we comply with this just for a while? The economy will boom because you're going to give personal incomes a chance to catch up with state spending, and that's going to create surpluses, and that's going to create economic activity that you're going to have the money to be able to comply with the limit later on. It makes total economic sense. And I think it's a tad bit arrogant of state leaders to say, you know what, we're not going to change anything at the state level, and we'll just dump it all down to you people at the local level. Because that's kind of what they're saying. They're saying, you know what, if we don't want to pay for it the state, let's just dump it off to the locals. And to me, that's offensive. And if I was somebody in a local government and I heard that kind of nonsense coming from state leaders, I'd be pretty upset about it.
Mr. Bynes, what alternatives do you have to the lid?
Well, Dale, there are alternatives every session. There are propositions. There are bills to cut and reduce and become more efficient. They don't happen to hit the limelight or fall into Mr. Nabity's basket of toys. What I mentioned in my earlier speech, I suggested that, again, to help our seniors, you'll see a state tax taken on this year. I am very confident that this will go away. Seniors are leaving Nebraska because our state tax is killing them. You'll see a run at inheritance tax for the same reason. Income taxes, our revenues are up. So despite what you're hearing from the other side, the state doesn't spend all the money. We are fiscal stewards. Not everything's right, but if you don't see the whole picture, if you're looking at the this thing through 423 blinders, you don't understand that there's much more to the problem of higher taxes. Do I want to lower taxes? All taxes? Absolutely. And I don't for 1 minute suggest that the easy solution is, just pass it down to the property tax owners. That's offensive. The state will do the best we can with what we've got, but in the very end, we're going to have to offload the cost of government.
I'm going to give you each a 30-second summation.
Summation?
So, yes.
Every excuse that we've heard today about why it's a bad idea is exactly why you need it. Because there are too many special interest groups. There are too many people asking for more and more out of state government. And there are a ton of great stories of why you need to do this and why you need to do that. The bottom line is we can't afford what we're doing here. And we're committing economic suicide by allowing the state of Nebraska to continue to grow spending out of control. This conversation occurred in 1998. This conversation occurred back in 1980. We've got to get spending under control, and I hope you'll vote yes for 423. And again, the website is sosnebraska.com.
Senator Bynes.
Dale, thank you. And again, thank you all in the audience. I appreciate you being here. We did try this in 1998, and the voters overwhelmingly said it's a stupid idea. This is a bad idea for Nebraskans. This is a bad idea for everywhere in the country. You heard Coloradans say that. Let me just say that I have full faith in the Nebraska people that they'll take the time to understand Initiative 423, not the sound bites that you hear on the radio, not the sound bites that you hear from the proponents. Thank you.
Well, our thanks to Dave Nabody and Mick Mines for opening up this discussion. I don't know that our minds are made up as a result of it, but I think it has been a most interesting conversation, and thank you both very, very much. And our thanks also to everybody in attendance at the Omaha Press Club and to our KIOS audience. Next month, our Press Club Noon Forum will feature a debate between 2nd District Congressional candidates Lee Terry and Jim Esch. That's going to be on Thursday, October 19th. Today's forum is now adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. We've heard a debate between Dave Nabody, a member of SOS, or Stop Overspending Nebraska, and Mick Mines, a member of the Nebraska State Legislature from Blair, Nebraska. Their topic was LB 423, a petition initiative appearing on the November 7th Nebraska ballot, which would limit the growth of spending by the Nebraska State Legislature. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, September 21st, 2006, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. If you'd like to attend future forums in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.